Pod. 22 Pod. In the city that sounds nice. Huh. Did he grow up with a band in Northampton, or how did it work?
Yeah, I mean, what, are we going back to the start? I mean, yeah, I'm from Northampton. In terms of the band, like, it first started when I was... when I applied to be a singer in this, like, hardcore, post-hardcore band called Forever Into October. And there was a advert on the wall in local rehearsal studios called Big Noise. So I went for that, but I was actually studying in London at the time, doing like commercial music. But anyway, so I basically commuted back and forth, but I always wanted to be in a band. So I was like, yeah, this is sick. And then, yeah, so I got in, and then we kind of folded that up. We played a few gigs with don't really want to say their name now, but like Lost Prophets, people like that. Anyway, from that, the three guys, there was two brothers and a guy called Sam, who it was the guitarist for The Departure. We just kind of, you know, for a couple of years, like they got me on to kind of old 80s kind of indie bands like Japan and like synth pop, like just Gary Numan, things like that. And I guess that's where the sound of the band came. And then me and Sam like broke away and got a few songs together. And I was still commuting basically back and forth to London and then coming up at weekends. And then, yeah, we recruited like school friends basically to kind of make it into a five piece. So it wasn't really like, it wasn't like we were in a band for 10 years, like, and then we finally made it. It was all kind of, it was like, when was it? January 2004, we were, we just kind of got into a rehearsal room, got six songs together, and then by April, by the way, in the background, my final university a project was basically to start a band. So
right.
I was like, right, okay. So I was like having these weekly meetings with my tutor, going like, right, so we need to get some press shots and all that stuff. And then like,
was it a music degree then? Sorry,
what's that?
Was it a music degree you were doing?
Yeah, it was like commercial music, which is basically, I mean, we did a bit of like the business. It was basically like getting together with people and writing songs and a bit of networking and stuff like that. It wasn't really something you could be like, go and get. I mean, there are a few of the guys there that have gone into like work at Universal and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was cool. It was fun. But my main thing was like, I'm gonna get signed in a band. So yeah, so where was I? So basically, we went to do this demo with a friend of mine called Tom Stubbs, who was working in a studio in London. So we went down for the weekend, did a demo of like three tracks, and then basically I was like, right, we're going to stay down. And I got the Yellow Pages, that's how bloody old, like back in the day it was. And I phoned up the record companies, right? And I was like, right, I'd just done work experience at Parlophone in their press office. I went round to the A&R guy, A&R guys, introduced myself, and I was like, yeah, I'm in a band, and like all that. And I basically rang up all the labels. Was like, yeah, Nathan Thompson from Parlophone's interested. We're in town. Wondered if we could come in for a meeting. So basically, and we were all like proper, like we used to buy our clothes from like the women's section of H&M, like proper tight, like guy liner. Like, so we were walking around, like looking like the Lost Boys, like a goth version of Duran Duran, I guess. We were walking around London, walking into like, like just standing at the reception, like waiting for the A&R to come and get us. And they let us in, man. And we just went round to like four or five different labels. And then I started getting phone calls. I'm like, literally, people like calling me, going, like press agents calling me. Like, my phone didn't stop ringing, and I was like back at my mum's in Northampton, going, this is absolutely mental, like proper buzzy. And then by the Friday, we had this gig in Northampton at the Roadmender, and literally like the whole industry just swamped, like on the place. It was like, we had like the guy that signed Suede was like backstage, like just saying, oh, you guys are amazing and all that. Like, we proper had the buzz, basically.
So like, you were able to kind of use Parlophone and kind of use that as leverage to get you in the conversation with other labels.
Yeah, basically. And like, he wasn't actually that, like, I just knew him from doing work experience there, and I told him I was in a band. But like, yeah, I mean, back then there wasn't any, it was all like, it was more, the industry was in control more, because there wasn't social media, and do you know what I mean? It was still like MTV2 was like the thing that got you famous, do you know what I mean? Like, you couldn't get, like, it wasn't TikTok. So yeah, that was how I did it, really. And people seemed to like the sound, yeah, I guess. Like,
and it was Parlophone that signed you, was it?
Yeah, it was basically Parlophone. Yeah, well, we had this rehearsal. So we had that gig. I can't remember, like, the timeline, but I remember we had, like, various, like, while we were recruiting a drummer, we had, like, various different drummers, like, standing for gigs and stuff. And then, like, then Andy, the guy that ended up being a drummer, he came up for an audition, and then he auditioned in the local drum shop, and then I was like, right, you got the job. And then he ended up staying with me at my mum's, like, and then, yeah, it was cool, man. It was a wicked time, like, looking back. But we didn't have a manager, so we had, like, all these managers interested, and then Martin Hall, who manages like Manic Street Preachers, like the Horrors. Well, the Horrors weren't even a thing then, but he was like a big manager. He came and saw us at a rehearsal, and he was like, shall I tell the other managers to go away? Like, yeah. He was like well keen. And then he ended up, then Parlophone came down to see us at the rehearsal. And then, yeah, we, like, they said, we want to sign you. And like, and then Martin, the manager, was like, right, you can quit your jobs now. And like, so we just quit our jobs. I was working in a bar. I just like quit. Yeah, I just walked out, and then that was it. Full time musicians, like 21. No, I think I was 22. Like, yeah, just turned 22.
Skipping back a little bit, like, how many of those six songs ended up on the first album then?
All of them.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Basically, like, I'm trying to not miss anything out, but so I think it's like April when we like got offered the deal, and then it took a bit of time, like lawyers and stuff. And like in the meantime, we got on the Killers support tour. I think that was like their first tour, when like Mr. Brightside was like first coming out. So that was like going around the country, like sold out, like that was sick. And and our first single came out in August, basically, and got to number 40 in the charts.
Right. So what's the timeline here, like, from, you know, coming up with the songs to being on tour with the Killers? Like, how long are we talking?
Well, six months, basically.
Right. I mean, that's mad, isn't it?
But the thing is, we kind of said that as we, it was 6 months before, you know, in between when we first all got the five piece together, like rehearsing. But I'd add some of the songs, like me and Sam had had like some of the songs like in demo form, like the year before. But we kind of went round saying, you know, we thought it was cool to say it happens like really quick, but NME did this big page like radar thing on us, being like taking the mic, being like, right, like they'll be split up by October. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think people thought we were put together.
All right.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they thought we'd like, we're like an indie, like Westlife or something. I don't know. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But really, in reality, it was like years of hard work to writing songs and get, you know what I mean, learning your craft. But it was an overnight like thing, yeah.
So yeah, just going back to the songwriting, then you say, you know, you put years of work in. How do you like constantly be churning out new material, kind of thing, and working on songs?
Yeah, I mean, I used to basically at that point I was like obsessed with like Gary Numan. I used to wake up in the morning like singing along to like Gary Numan, like here in my car. I'm like proper getting that, like, I don't know. Like, have you heard The Departure? Have you heard any of the stuff?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, it was really funny, like listening to your stuff again this week, because I wasn't sure how much I knew, and then I was like, I really remember those singles.
Yeah, like Be My Enemy and stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got a real memory of them being played on Zane Lowe a lot, I think.
Yeah.
And like, it really took me back. It was really nostalgic listening to it.
Yeah. Yeah, talking about songwriting, at that time I was like, I mean, my process, I used to have an 8-track, like a little tape recorder, and I used to make a little, like a drum beat, and then jam, like, it might take me all day, like, jamming over, like, I didn't really know the craft, I was more, like, putting the time in, and, like, you know, ideas would form, and then I'd take them to Sam, or take them to, like, Ben, the bass player, or we'd all flesh them out in the rehearsal room. But the thing is, though, after those 6 songs, we got put in like Real World, Peter Gabriel studio in Bath, and like the label were like, right, we need, like, can you write another one like that? And we were like, we don't know how to. So like, we were like proper like struggling, really, like, because we'd had these 6 songs and we'd been out on tour, like, do you know what I mean? Like, and then maybe we hadn't, you know, given it time to develop and stuff like that. But there's different ways of looking at it, isn't there? It's like, do you just go with the hype, don't you, I guess? So we just kind of did what we thought, like, was best. But I've definitely learned more of my craft, like, now, like, you know, carrying on now, what I'm doing now, definitely.
Just getting back to the timeline, you were, from what I've read, signed after 4 gigs, is that right?
Yeah, there was one of the guitarists, Lee, did some Facebook posts recently, like, just like reminiscing. And like one of the managers from around here was like, he's never seen as a buzz like when we were first getting signed, like, it's just like, apart from the Arctic Monkeys. So it's like proper like mental.
Were you able to like fit into some kind of scene, or were you like too quickly off on tour with the likes of the Killers to like really feel part of another scene, if you know what I mean?
I mean, there was other bands around, like the Cherubs, there was the Rakes, there was the Bravery, there was like, it was part of that, when it, like, I don't know if you remember that time, but like, it was like proper, like Franz Ferdinand had come out in 2003 with like their like a couple of singles, and I remember like we got likened to them, and I hadn't even listened to their stuff, so that was weird. I feel like there's something in the water with music and with scenes. There's always like bands doing similar things, isn't there, even if they're not aware of each other. Do you know what I mean? It's just like culture, isn't it, I guess. But in terms of scene, I guess we weren't really part of like a local scene or anything like that. We just went straight for the festivals, do you know what I mean? Like, it was like mental, like we're playing Glastonbury, like, I remember like, not Glastonbury, we're playing Reading when our single was out, like All Maps Out, and I remember like playing it in like the Carlin stage or something, and like everyone shouting like, Northampton! And like, it was mental, it was like, yeah, it's the power of like the media and stuff, but like power of MTV. I remember like turning up at gigs and like people recognising it. It's like, just the power of the media like back then was the thing, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you're just in a very good position. You obviously like made the most of the opportunity being at Parlophone.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, bands will spend years trying to get noticed by someone like that, whereas you were already in there. And obviously you had the songs, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was kind of opportunistic, I guess. Like, it was just the right time. Like, well, I mean, we had a guy come up before we got signed. Like, he came up, an A&R guy came up from London to one of our houses. And he was like, what you should do is, like, don't sign a major deal. So put a single out on an independent and, like, let it grow. And, like, we didn't listen to him. Because obviously Parlophone were offering like the big bucks and we were like, well, you know what I mean? But in hindsight, people like Block Party and things like that, like they sign indie deals, didn't they? And I guess allowed to develop a bit more. Whereas when you're on a major, it's like the expectations are like, you know, you're like signed with like Coldplay and people, do you know what I mean? It's easy to say like in hindsight, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like even getting the opportunities is a great thing.
So was it like a multi-album deal that you signed then?
Yeah, it was like a 5-album deal. We got to it, like they kept us on after the first album, but then we took ages writing the second album, and then also the company, the Parlophone, got brought out by Guy Hans, and I think he just looked at anyone who wasn't making money and was like, see you later.
That first album then, recorded with a producer called Steve Osborne, who produced New Order.
Yeah.
And Suede, Happy Mondays. What was that experience like? Was he provided by the record company or did you kind of seek him out?
Yeah, basically, I think he mixed, because we had a couple of, like the first couple of singles were actually just mixed from the first demos we did. You know, when I've said we went to my friend's, when we stayed in London and called the Yellow Pages, we basically mixed. So Steve mixed Be My Enemy, I believe, and we really liked the mix, so we went with him. And we went to Real World. Yeah, we like stayed over. Like, I don't know if you've ever been to Real World. It's basically like a spaceship. Like, it's in Bath. It's like a, like you drive. It's probably in the country. It's like an old, big old, like farmhouse type thing. So we had like every morning you come down, you get like breakfast, and then dinner. You get served dinner. You're basically like a rock star before you're a rock star. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? And then you get your own room, which is not a 4-poster bed. And like lovely like lounge area, playing chess in the evening. Do you know what I mean? Like proper made it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, sounds like St. George's Park for musicians or something.
Yeah. So yeah, that was good. I think we were there for like 2 weeks.
What was he like as a producer then? Because we have some people that's some pretty wild techniques from producers, where others are quite chilled out. What was he like?
I think he was just into making us sound like a band. Like everyone loved the way we sounded live, so we're just trying to create that. Sam, the guitarist, was quite like, he created the sound. Like he was quite into creating the sound and like, I think, and the way the instruments work together, like the two guitars and the bass and things like that. So we didn't add loads of, you know, stuff on top. It was just recording, getting the energy across of the band, I think.
And you said, you know, you had those 6 songs and you need to write more.
Yeah.
At what point were they written and how, kind of thing?
They were just written like over that time, like over that year. Because we recorded it. Well, we were signed in like May, June, and we went to do the album, I think, November. Mate, I can't really remember. Like, it just...
Yeah, fair play. But were you able to write on the road, or was it more when you had time off?
Well, I used to always like take an 8-track to the whole, like on tour and stuff, and like try to do stuff. But like, we used to try and rehearse ideas like in soundcheck and stuff. But it is hard to write on the road. You need, do you know what I mean? But I was always trying to write stuff. Basically, is the answer to that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 22 Grand Pod. If Naughty's guitar music is your thing, then you might enjoy our Patreon page, where for £3 a month you will get access to the following series. The Naughties Deep Dive, where we go through the likes of the Stalking Pete Doherty documentary in painful detail. My favourite 2000s album, where patrons and other guests come on to talk about their favourite album of the era. Legend or Landfill, in which we go through Enemy's top 10 albums of each year from 2001 and see if we think they are indeed legendary or for the landfill. Unsigned Stories, where we chat to bands that didn't quite make it in terms of signing that elusive record deal. We also have Fan Stories, where I talk to people about their memories and opinions on all things Naughties Indie. You also get early access to any main podcast episodes, and it's also worth checking out the YouTube page, where you can see extended video versions of the interviews, as well as plenty of other bits of commentary and opinion. All links are in the description. Now back to the pod. Yeah, I mean, the list of bands that you toured with, Killers, Duran Duran, Placebo. And you played at Wembley with Placebo, is that right?
I think that was like October 2004. I remember you come out and there's like just a sea of claps. And it's like you're not even there. It's like you're in another world. And it's so far removed from the crowd. It's weird. You know, like small gigs, you get people right up close to you. With this, it's like there's a big gap and there's a barrier. And then, it was amazing. And we actually made a lot of fans from that gig. It's amazing the power of like supporting. We made some like life, people that were really into our stuff. I was hanging out with Robert Smith's niece, she said she was anyway. She got me backstage to Placebo's dressing room, and like Brian Marker was there, like chain smoking, and Robert Smith was there having a beer, and he was like, "Yeah, you're right, you are." Like he doesn't talk like that, but he's just a normal bloke. And I remember going to get my Cure CDs and getting him to sign them. Bit surreal.
Yeah, what was your relationship like with other bands? Were there any other bands at the time that you were quite close with or anything?
I think a couple of the guys were friends with like Block Party, like Russell, and we were fans of The Editors. We didn't get a, I mean, we used to like cross paths on tours and things like that, but we weren't like hanging out kind of close like that. We went on tour with the Kooks. That was fun. There's some funny stories. I don't know if I'm allowed to like say any funny stories.
Go for it, yeah. More the better. No.
So we went to Japan and played Winter and Summer Sonic, and I remember that, like, I was speaking to one of the guys from Interpol, and I remember like, when I was that young, I used to like, because I was quite nervous, I think I used to come across as like being really arrogant. And I remember like talking to him, basically it ended up me sounding like we were better than them or something. I can't remember, but I just remember being like, what am I doing? Like, I think I was a bit of a dick, like, sometimes.
I know what you mean though, when like you got like, you're obviously anxious, and then
yeah,
you're worried about how you're coming across, to the point where you become a bit disingenuous, or you feel like,
yeah, like
not coming across as you want to, kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, because you just thrust in front of the camera, and you're like, yeah,
yeah. I was watching some videos as well, and like you played like Top of the Pops at one point.
Yeah, Top of the Pops Saturday.
Is that what it was?
That,
right.
That was like a kid's version. Yeah, it was cool, man. Like, mate, I can't even watch that. Like, what, have you seen the one where we're all standing next to Fern Cotton? Looking well nervous, yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't see that bit.
Mate, we did some funny stuff. Like, I don't know if you've seen Lump in My Throat video.
Yeah, I think so.
But the one, like, basically, I had to wear these. It was like, I was walking on air for some of it. So I had to wear these, like, wooden things anyway, walking through Japan as you do,
right?
And I remember, yeah, I had to stay a day later because I like to do my stuff and the band, and I ended up like getting back to the airport, getting picked up by like a driver to take me back home to Northampton. It was all just like money everywhere, do you know what I mean? Like
talking to Luke Jenner from The Rapture, who said you get very used So like people doing everything for you, basically.
Yeah.
And when that stops, it's kind of a weird feeling.
Yeah, you do, you know. Yeah, I think because you get so much smoke blown up your ass when you first signed, like everyone, you know, and everyone's saying how brilliant you are, and there's like the label coming to all the gigs, and like, you know, the head of the label coming over, like going like, yeah, you guys are great, you know, you're going to be the next big thing. And then when it doesn't quite happen, people just start like fragmenting away. It all gets a bit weird. And do you know what I mean? Like, that's what happened to us anyway, towards the end. But no, mate, it was a fun, I mean, it feels like a different lifetime for me now. Like, it feels like totally different. So long ago, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. No, if you even like someone like me that's just a fan of this stuff, it feels like a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, what more for like, yeah, it was cool. It was like when indie, like proper rule. I remember being at the same studio as the Kaiser Chiefs at one point when they were first. I remember sitting on the steps with Ricky, and he was like, when they hadn't even released anything. And like they must have had these songs like I Predict a Riot, and there's bands like that have outlasted, man, isn't it? Like, do you know what I mean? I'll still hear that song on TV adverts now. You know, the quality of the songs, you know. I think looking back, like our songs were of that time, I guess. Do you know what I mean? They weren't like big crossover, like Heart FM songs, do you know what I mean? Like more alternative, innit? Do you know what I mean? So
in terms of getting songs together for a second album, then like what was the process and you know, what happened in the end kind of thing?
Well, so the album, the first album, basically, I feel like we basically delayed it for ages. Like it came out almost a year after our first single, and it basically didn't do that well. Like I think we got back to Japan or something, and we were in the airport, and I remember like our manager going like, oh yeah, it's number like 70 in the charts or something. I mean, it was good in our hometown. It was like number in the top 10 at HMV, and we did like signings and all that. But I remember being like a bit gutted, like, but then the label will, you know, they gave us the option again to do the album, and we kind of lost our way really, like in terms of writing and stuff. We were writing, but it was completely different sound, and it took for us to get Ed Buller, who's Suede and Pulp and things like that. He basically, our manager got us with him, and he ended up coming to our rehearsals for like 6 months, and we just wrote the record with him, the second album, and we actually finished it, and we released, and we were quite happy with it. But it was very different. It was us trying to do like a mainstream second album, basically. And we'd lost the guitarist and the drummer. We'd sacked the guitarist, and we were trying to cling on. I mean, looking back, I can't remember really, but all I know is we didn't get to release the second album. But we were there, so we didn't get dropped till 2008. So we obviously spent like 2.5 years. Trying to make this second album, basically. The difficult second album. Do you know what I mean? Like,
so you recorded it, was it just shelved, basically? Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
And have you ever been able to like get a hold of it or anything?
No, well, at the end of the deal, the label were like, do you want some money or do you want the masters? And we took the money.
Right.
Because we obviously didn't have any... Like, we were like... We'd come out of uni or whatever and... We're living the dream, and then suddenly you get to 25 and you're like told you might have to get a proper job. It's like proper gutted. Do you know what I mean? No, you think you're on a certain trajectory. I guess for me, it was the first time that you have a reality check. You know, when like you're young and you can just strut around going, yeah, life's amazing. And then suddenly you realize that like you do have to fail as well. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, so just like on that second album, then are you able to like listen to it anywhere? Or can you not do anything with it?
Yeah, it's on It was called Inventions, and there's tracks called, if you go on YouTube and type in The Departure, Chemicals, or We Will Be The Only Ones, or 7 Years. There's a few diehard fans that are like, I'd give my right bollock to if you could, you know, get this album. But we've chatted about it, and it's not, you know, it's one of them things that's like, I don't really want to release it or anything. I don't think we could. Like, we have to go to Warner's and like see if we could get it back. But
just, you might not be able to talk about it, but just in terms of sacking the guitarist, like, what was the story with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I can't really remember loads of it, but all I remember was it was Valentine's Day I think it might have been 2006, and we called a band meeting and we sacked him, basically, like, because we weren't getting along and didn't seem very happy in rehearsals. Like, anyway, I think, yeah, it was a legitimate reason at the time. Looking back, he's actually shared recently his experience of it, basically, and he was saying he was going through a really hard time and there was no communication. And so, you know, looking back, we could have, you know, maybe he was like expressing how he felt in a different way, and we could have, you know, sorted it out. But I think we were just like hell bent on like, we're gonna make this second album, and we didn't want anything to stand in our way. Do you know what I mean? But mate, I can't really remember, it was so long ago.
Yeah, fair play. I guess there's all kinds of pressures as well.
Hey, mate, yeah, there is. I mean, and also the Ed Buller, mate, we had to sack the drummer as well, like when we did the second, because he was like, I'm not making the album with that drummer.
Wow.
So we had to, so yeah, it was all dropping like flies, mate. I mean, we were just, yes, I guess the thing about it was, is we came, it's all getting quite philosophical, which is fine. It all came together so quickly and almost manufactured that I guess we didn't have much of like foundation as a band of like years of like doing it together. So I guess when all the glitz and glamour kind of went, like there wasn't much left there. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't much substance around us as a band. So, because you do get up, you know, you do get some bands that get drops and then like carry on, don't you, and get signed again or put. So we could have done that, but we didn't.
In terms of calling it a day, then did that just make sense at the time, kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was too. I remember like we'd done a tour, we supported. It was like we put 7 Years out as a like a limited edition single. And we did a tour around, and it didn't really sell that well. I remember we supported We Are Scientists as a few in 2007, I think, and that was cool. And then we did our own tour, and I remember playing Islington Academy, and it was like there was a few people there, and the label came with the boxes, with the vinyl of the single, and like handed it. It was like basically like, goodbye. Here's the CDs we didn't sell.
Clearing your desk.
Yeah. And I remember like at the time I was like, I think I was just like, I'll show you, I'll come back. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, when a band gets signed, it's everyone's on the line. Like the A&R guy, it's his failure as well, isn't it? If it doesn't work. But then over the years, a lot of my friends have been signed and stuff, and some of them haven't even got to release like more than one single. Do you know what I mean? Like the so I think we did well to get where we got.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, was that point where you kind of looked at each other and were like, we can't carry this on, you know what I mean? You didn't have that kind of desire.
Yeah, and obviously like everyone, you know, you get that thing of like people want a bit of security. Like the bass player is now like a radiographer, he does like lectures. He's changed completely. He's, you know, he went back to studying. I guess people think about their lives, don't they? And it affects people. I think it affected everyone a lot. Like going, going into that experience of like, you know, we went to like EMI part, like Christmas parties, champagne, like chat, just chatting to Ronnie Wood and, do you know what I mean, and from the Stones, and like getting into, and then just getting taken out of that, and you're back to a normal guy pulling pints in the pub. Do you know what I mean?
Like you say, you were 25. The band,
when we got dropped, I think, yeah,
the band wasn't a thing anymore. Like, how do you deal with that?
I actually met a girl called Claire Colton, who is still a great friend. She's actually a really, she's big PR person now. She works, she does like Adele's and Dua Lipa's PR. Anyway, I met her. We were from Northampton. She was from Northampton anyway. And I was like in and I went down and just crashed on a sofa for a few months and like lived in London for a bit, trying to, like, I think I kind of did some music straight away, like tried to get, did a couple of gigs. But I was obviously just like dealing with it in my own way, and obviously like gutted, really. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But I guess you don't want to admit it, do you? Do you know what I mean? But
no, definitely. I mean, we talked to a few people who, you know, say it's hard to deal with. Like, you hear about footballers who deal with not playing anymore or whatever. But I guess at 25 as well, you're thinking, you know, I'm nowhere near done at that point, are you?
No, not at all. I mean, mate, I've carried on. So I met, after that, the next like project that was half decent was a band called New Islands, which was Claire's boyfriend at the time. He was he was living in his mum and dad's, that they'd kitted out the barn at the back of his garden, and we used to go up there for weekends and like write this like cool electronica kind of stuff. And that was wicked. That was like Animal Collective. That was like that kind of synthy indie time, like 2009. And that was wicked. And then that kind of, basically I've just carried on doing music, and now I'm doing solo stuff. I've got a record deal with a company in America. I've just finished an album. I've got some of my tracks are being played on radio and stuff. So I'm still doing it. It's just what, for me, it's just what I do. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not really in it to, I don't really want to be like famous just for the sake of it. I just want to people to connect with my songs, and do you know what I mean? I feel like that's my purpose. So my songs have got way better now, like in terms of like commercial quality, like just more me, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I've been enjoying some of your songs on Spotify.
Yeah.
Me yours, enjoyed that. And then...
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's just definitely one.
Yeah, My House. The lyrics on that are interesting. You kind of directly refer to the band.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that's not the right one. Is it more than this?
Yeah, it's been quite... Basically, going solo has been quite cathartic. Like, basically, I've just been like, right, I'm going to stop trying to write pop songs, trying to do that. I'm just going to write what I know, like, be honest. And yeah, like, yeah, Wearing Women's Clothes from Primark. Yeah.
Yeah. Ripped our songs from the 80s and had big dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally different now. I saw under the questions about, obviously, what do you think it is like for bands now? And I was going to say, Matt, it's like complete, I mean, you know, it's completely different. Like, you have to, you know, share your stuff on TikTok and all that. And I mean, it's, you can create your own audience, basically. You don't need labels like and stuff like that as much. It's a different environment, so. And I think if I was to sit here and go, oh, it's really hard, and like, it's just, that just means that I'm getting old, basically. I think you just got to embrace it, because like, that's just how it is, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, when people say, oh, it wasn't like that back in, it's like, yeah, just move with the times, or you just look like you're old. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but do you think you're in a better position now doing things kind of solo than you would be in a band kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I've got friends who I work with, like a producer, Dave. I basically collaborate with different people. But they're obviously just more in a paid, like, you know, I pay for a song or or the label pays us. And I've got a really cool label, a guy called Jürgen, who's really like just lets me do my thing, and you know, it's just cool. Do you know what I mean? There's no pressure. It's like, right, we're gonna make an album now. We're gonna put it out. It's like, do you know what I mean? And then you never know what song it's gonna be. You can't, you know. Nowadays, you don't. It's not all about like, oh, the first single has to be a massive hit. You can just keep releasing songs, and then like one of them will connect. Or
yeah. I was gonna say, on your Spotify, it's just a lot of singles, and then you got like a small EP. Is it like?
Yeah, I got an EP. Yeah.
It's not like based around an album anymore. It's just like steadily just releasing songs.
Yeah, although this next year I'm doing an album.
Right, okay.
But this, which I've been, so, and the three of the tracks that I've released this year are going to be on that album. And then there's going to be, well, it's 13 songs. So, mate, doing an album on your own is like, well, just making an album's hard. Because you always like listen to songs like, oh, could that be better? Like, the amount of times I've sat up at night, like, fretting over like one little bit, and then I'm like, what am I doing? Sometimes you have to just let it go.
Talk to other people who say that it's like you miss having like that sounding board of other people in the band to tell you if something's good or not, because you kind of get in your own head about certain things, don't you?
Yeah. But then it is good to just be able to do what you do. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just me and the piano. Like, that's how I write all my songs, on piano basically.
Is that different to how you would back in the day?
Yeah, I used to be guitar. And like just like one like Interpol chords, like down, 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 down. And then like me going like singing over the top. And then I used to sometimes come to rehearsals with like, well, we used to like, we had a verse, and then then I'd go home like at lunch to try and write a chorus, and then come back with a chorus, and it was like more of a team effort, do you know what I mean?
You obviously hit a lot of big landmarks early on, but was there a highlight or a high point, do you think?
Being in Japan was a high point, because we had fans waiting at the hotel, like learning how to write in English so they could write us letters, and getting taken around with like we had our own interpreter. And like we got took for dinner in. I think the high point generally was like meeting all these cool people. Like, you know, you always meet so many cool people on tour. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm still in touch with now, to be fair. Like there's a journalist called Nadine from Germany, and we ended up being friends with her and her friend, and we got them into like all the festivals, and we still talk to her now and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? So I do miss the touring lifestyle, but also I don't, because it's like you don't get much sleep.
Is that something you're gonna do with the new album? Are you gonna tour with the new music?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I mean, yeah, I'm gonna do. Yeah, I am. Yeah. Basically the answer to that. But I mean, it's just obviously I'll need to find where to do it, because obviously I haven't got a big following. So
how will you look live then? Are you gonna have like a live band with you or what?
I've got, at the moment it's just me and a guy called Dave who does a lot of production. He plays guitar and does backing track. It's just expensive to get a band, man, because you only get like a small fee for gigs, and then it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, so.
So like with your current label, where is the money for labels now? Is it in through Spotify listens or?
Yeah, I don't know. So Spotify syncs, YouTube views, things like that. Money that they made in the 90s that they haven't spent.
Yeah, fair enough. You say it's an American label. Like, how did that come about?
I'm a songwriter as well, so I wrote a song with a girl called Salt Ashes, who's on the label, and then I sent some of my songs, and then he was like, oh. And now it's blossomed into a lovely relationship. Well, no, it's cool, man.
So have you written on any co-write on any songs we'd know or anything?
No, I've done sessions. I've done sessions with, like, I've almost had a song cut by Rudimental. I've written with people that are involved with big stuff. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time doing that, to be honest. I've written a song for a Czech girl called Nikki that's just come out. I don't go looking for that, if you know what I mean, but I'll do it. I'll be focused on my own stuff. I mean, doing that is basically like starting about, it's basically as much work as like doing your own stuff, because you have to go hustling, like, down in, you know, you have to go and meet all the right people, and yeah, it's cool.
Listen to Nick Hodgson's podcast, who from the Kaiser Chiefs, who's a songwriter.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of people from that era kind of getting on the songwriting thing as well. It's interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Looking back at those times and those early days, is there anything you would do differently, do you think?
Probably, yeah. Probably loads.
Yeah.
I think I'd enjoy the moments more. Like, I remember always kind of getting wrapped up in, like, because every week there was like, we were trying to get on the Radio 1 playlist, and then we didn't get on. Like we got loads of support on Radio 1, like Joe Wiley, Zane Lowe, but we never got on the playlist. So I remember just thinking, as soon as we got signed, like, how long is it going to take till we get dropped? Like, I remember, like, worrying too much, basically. Whereas I wish I'd, like, just enjoyed the moment more, do you know what I mean?
You obviously played, like, a lot of big shows. Like, talked about Wembley and festivals. So what was kind of, like, what was the best festival you played, do you think? Oh, the best show, really, if you can think of one.
Oh, man, I can't remember. I think it was in Sweden, right? Well, we were at a festival. We were on at like 6 o'clock. They'd made us our own cocktail, like, and then we went on and we got an encore. Basically, like, festivals in Europe, they treat you so well, like, and yeah. So we had an encore, like, we came like in the middle of the day, and like I remember the guitarist was like doing this like riff, like the air, like, I thought it was the edge. And you two we're proper milking it.
Yes.
And like, that was sick. But that was, yeah, just like playing live, man. Like, do you know what I mean?
I always like to ask if people have got a funny story about the Gallagher brothers, but if not, just like maybe a funny story about kind of a prominent name.
Oh, there is, yeah. Basically, we played Rock on Seine and it's a Baby Shambles. You know, he was renowned for not turning up. Yeah. Basically he was running late, and we got bumped up to his slot. So I went out in front of 15,000 people, and I was like, basically something like, at least I could be bothered to turn up or something, right? It's like basically slagging him off, right in front of everyone. Then after the gig, it turns out that he was there and he'd heard it, basically, and he wanted to have a scrap with me.
Really?
Like, so I hid in the dressing room, and I don't remember it fully, but basically that was another example of me just speaking before I think, and you know, what was I thinking? Like, I should have been grateful, like, not being like going out like, where is he now? Like, really? Like, so I don't, yeah, I think that was, you know, an opportunity to make friends where we made enemies instead, you know what I mean? So there you go.
Right, it just sounds like having a laugh, to be fair. But
yeah, I know.
So you managed to stay hidden from him then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, because I'll probably be like, you know, like one of those lads at school, and it's like all mouth, and like, I'm sorry, mate. Sorry. Do you know what I mean? Didn't mean it, mate.
I mean, that's spot on.
Nice.
What should people like kind of search for when they're looking for Maddox Jones, isn't it? Are you going to know?
Yeah, Maddox Jones. It's all on social. Just put It's Maddox Jones. Facebook. I'm most active on Instagram, so follow me. And I'm on TikTok as well, like, sometimes, even though I don't really know what I'm doing, but I try. And then I've got loads of content. Loads of cool videos. And I'll be releasing an album next year, basically. So,
yes, look forward to it.